Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I hope you've had a good week and hope you've been active in spreading the truth. Today, I've got a special episode for you. Alex Newman is going to be joining us, and we're going to dig into the deep state, the key players, the bureaucracy, the secret societies, and all the details of that people need to understand, and how that all is kind of being funneled into the face of globalism, the face of the effort to work toward world government, the World Economic Forum. But anyway, I think you're going to really enjoy that. Before I get to the interview with Alex, I want to cover just a few things quickly. One, it was announced that the COVID-19 vaccine passports will be imposed in the UK, I think, starting this month. So things are moving forward. They are just trying to do what they want to do with the Great Reset, whether we like it or not. And so that was interesting. That's moving forward. Also, as I was talking about California last week and God's judgment and some of the things going on in our country, some of you felt I was saying all Californians are no good and there's no pastor standing up. And if it came across that way, that is not what I was trying to communicate. There's millions of great people, conservative Christian people in California. I know many of them and have family that live there. And I was talking about the leadership. I was talking about people that are running the state, that are shaking their fist in the face of God. And that's why just calamity after calamity has been happening to California and will continue to. Something I've noticed in my life is when you openly see people pushing policies that are self-destructive, but they're acting as if they're the greatest thing ever, that's God's judgment. It's something that clearly destroys, you see as something that, oh no, this is going to be great. Like, let's defund the police and abolish prisons. This is going to be wonderful. Anyone that believes that is true is being judged by God to believe something that is the opposite of truth, the opposite of logic and common sense. And so I was talking about that as well. But the disheartening thing is that every pastor in America is not standing up for what's happening in California or anywhere else. If there's one church closed in America, every pastor in America ought to be standing up and saying, no, you cannot do that. This is God's house. This is God's institution, and you have no authority. And so that's what it was discouraging that I was talking about, is it just seems so few. I know Pastor Mike at Calvary Chapel in San Jose, a good friend of mine, he's standing up. He's the only church in that whole area that has stood up, and he's got over $3.6 million in fines that have built up. And I spoke there just a few months ago, and every time his doors are open, it's a $10,000 fine. And he said, that's okay. Do whatever. I'm not closing the church for any reason. And so there's good people standing up, and you all have emailed me names of other good pastors. That's great. I'm just sad that it's not all pastors. And I just want you to know that I know there's many wonderful people in the state of California, but the majority are taking it on a road that leads to destruction. And I'm sorry to see that. So those that are subscribers, thank you. Those that watch on all the different platforms, thank you. Please consider going to agendaweekly.com and becoming part of what we do and getting all the things we offer each week. The news brief, prayer and action items, articles and videos that are educational to help you understand the times. And we would appreciate that greatly. But I think you're going to really enjoy this interview. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Curtis. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you.
I appreciate that. Well, we're going to dig into the deep state. A lot of people, I think, thought that was something that was just a conspiracy theory up until 2016, the day after the election, when everything started to come unglued toward President-elect Donald Trump, and people started to go, what's going on here? And then we saw his first 12 months in office where he couldn't even have a private meeting with his intelligence community with it not being on the cover of the New York Times or something. And so everyone started to realize the reality that many had talked about for decades. There's something much more powerful, much more influential, much more in control of our country than the elected officials we think are in charge. And so it was a wonderful blessing, really, because it opened the eyes of millions to see, okay, there really is someone behind the curtain. Who is it? What are they doing? Why are they so anti-American? Why are they trying to take our country down? What's their goal in doing that? And so we're going to dig into that. But in starting out, I guess the most obvious part of the deep state is the bureaucracy that's there. Talk about kind of what that is so people understand that element of the deep state.
Well, thank you, Curtis. And you're right. As far as Trump goes, I mean, when people ask me what are the most important things he did, I'd say that's certainly right up there at the top, if not number one, certainly in the top three. We went from the overwhelming majority of Americans being really clueless about what was going on as far as what happens behind the scenes in politics to suddenly this mass awakening where the polling data shows probably 3/4, maybe more of Americans now recognize we have something that has been euphemistically referred to as the deep state. Now, I think the first and most superficial component of this would be the bureaucracy. There really is a deep state within the bureaucracy. These people really think of themselves as a deep state. And this came out clearly. The FBI understood this. They actually did reports on this where they talked about that there are very high-level bureaucrats who are trying to frustrate and interfere with the orders that the president and his political appointees are giving. I compare it to And Americans really aren't very familiar with this show, but it's really funny. I encourage people to watch it just because it's funny. It's an old British comedy called Yes Minister. And you have these bureaucrats and the political appointees, like the main character of the show, and then his top bureaucrat. And he comes in and he gives some order. Hey, guys, go do such and such and such. And they'll say, oh, yes, minister, right away, minister. And then they walk away like, what a doofus. We're not going to do that. We're going to do whatever we want. And that's what is going on during the Trump administration. You've got what's called the Senior Executive Service. This is like the top of the pyramid. They serve right underneath the political appointees. So when it comes to the bureaucracy, think Lois Lerner, for example. She was a member of the Senior Executive Service. Now, throughout Trump's administration, more than 2/3 of the individuals in the Senior Executive Service had been appointed during the Obama administration, and many had been appointed before that. So this was a true bureaucratic deep state. We know kind of where their thought process is. The Hill did some breakdown on election spending in 2016, and they found that most of the bureaucracies, 95%+ of the political spending went to Hillary Clinton. So we know that's the side of the spectrum that they fall on. The Department of Education was 99.7. Department of Justice, I think, was over 97%. The Department of State was 99%. To Hillary. So you really get a sense that the whole bureaucracy that Trump was overseeing was a giant anti-Trump rally. I mean, and so he's there trying to manage millions and millions of employees who are incredibly hostile to him. And they, I think, saw themselves as doing the right thing by trying to interfere with what he was trying to accomplish. And whenever he would push really hard or his political appointees would push really hard, they'd run to the media and they'd go to the Washington Post and they'd cry, oh, Trump is bypassing the normal procedures or he's trying to force his agenda on us. So I think Americans got to see the tip of the iceberg there, but it is, the rod is so deep and it's so entrenched that even getting a president elected, you see the swamp is practically undrainable without divine assistance.
Yeah, no, it's, and people listening, some of the things, there's just at that federal level, there's about 3 million employees there. That doesn't count the armed services and things. And then just at the state and local level, there's over 20 million more that just have these jobs that are there. And they tend to, people that work for government tend to like government then, which means they vote Democrat because they know Democrats are going to give them more money, more power. And so it's just a self-serving vote, but that's what we're prone to do. So no, that's, interesting. And on a side note, you mentioned this in one of your videos, the Department of Agriculture. I think we would think on one hand, well, that's probably a more conservative branch. That's all the farmers in America. But the Department of Agriculture has been taken over too. 99.7% 0.4% of all donations from all the bureaucracy of the Department of Agriculture went to Hillary Clinton in 2016. 99.4%. Even something like farming, where you think, no, that's kind of traditional America. It's not anymore. They know everything is important, and that's why they take over every single thing that they can, because it continues to give them more power. What about, Alex, the intelligence community? You know, there's 16 different agencies that we know about. So, but just talk a little bit about how that works and what that's like in the deep state.
Yeah, happy to. And, you know, you mentioned this. State and local bureaucrats. I want to point out historically, those have been accountable and they've been working for their local communities or their state governments. But more and more, they are increasingly seeing themselves as appendages of Washington, D.C. Through funding mechanisms, through regulations, through, hey, if you want to participate in this, you've got to come be trained by us. So really, the deep state bureaucracy is rapidly expanding and it's absorbing all the other levels of government. Americans really should be concerned. And when you get to the intelligence agencies, they're very bureaucratic. And so in a sense, you could kind of classify them there. But they're also even more lawless. They are even more opaque. They have unimaginable powers. They have unimaginable technologies. I mean, some of the stuff you get into it and people think, wow, you know, you're some kind of kook. But it's all documented. I mean, even what came out back in the 1970s during the Church Committee hearings. And that's not to say that the Church Committee hearings had the best of intentions when they were investigating here. But some of the technology that was coming out, some of the documents that came out on MK Ultra, on their mind control experiments, on their assassination methods. I mean, we're talking clear back 50 years ago. They were doing these types of things, and the situation has rapidly deteriorated since then. So I would say the intelligence agencies are probably one of the most crucial operational arms of the deep state, and even the deep state behind the deep state. What you see is a very clear nexus between the shadowy characters that we'll talk about in a little bit in the secretive organizations and the think tanks and stuff. There's like a revolving door there with the intelligence agencies. Michael Hayden is a really good example. He ran the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency, and he's a regular attendee at the Bilderberg meetings. He's a participant at, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. We'll talk about those organizations in a little bit. And he runs around. He was bragging. I've got a video clip of him bragging that they now kill people based on their metadata. He just recently posted on Twitter that we should deport Trump supporters who won't take the vaccine to Afghanistan. I mean, this is the kind of guy who's bragging about killing people using these intelligence agencies without charging them with a crime, without taking them to a court where they can present evidence, without the presumption of innocence, without presenting anything to a jury so that they could be properly convicted. This is, you know, a whole new universe that Americans who grew up in an earlier era would have found totally inconceivable. So you have, you know, a lot of this goes back to the beginning. And I should make a caveat here. There are lots of good men and women who work in the intelligence agencies. I know some of them. I mean, I have them to my house for dinner. There's great people who work in the CIA and the NSA. Unfortunately, though, the rot at the top is pervasive. It's ubiquitous. And when you look at the agenda of these people, what you find is a very clear nexus with communism. And no, it's not just a figure of speech, literally communism. A really good example of that is John Brennan. John Brennan was the head of the CIA during the Obama administration. And he admitted in 2016, he was speaking to the Congressional Black Caucus. And I think he still assumed Hillary Clinton was going to be the president. So there was nothing to be concerned about. He admitted that back in the in the late 1970s, he was a communist. He told the CIA he had voted for Gus Hall in the 1978 election. Well, Gus Hall was the Soviet puppet candidate for the Communist Party USA, literally a tentacle of the mass murdering Soviet dictatorship. And so when he went to get his security clearance, he admitted this to them. You'd think they would have put the guy under surveillance, right? We're in a Cold War. They've got nuclear missiles pointed at our cities. But no, they gave him a security clearance, and then they promoted him up through the ranks so quickly they ended up running the CIA. Same thing with James Comey, former FBI chief, admitted that he was a communist. We've got this long pattern And it goes back to the very, very start, even before there was a CIA. It was the Office of Strategic Services. And I think anecdote illustrates the problem so well. Dick Novak wrote a column where he had accused the OSS of being infiltrated by communists. He just kind of threw that out there. Well, the president of the OSS Society, you know, the OSS veterans, wrote a letter to the Washington Post and said, oh, no. The OSS was not infiltrated by communists. We hired them, okay, under the guise of, you know, stopping Nazis. So very interesting how this all works. Now, the intelligence agencies, a lot of people don't realize this because, you know, they just see the spy movies and stuff. They have betrayed more of our allies than I could count. They have been responsible for so many friendly governments falling into communist hands that it would boggle your mind. It's just absolutely astounding. They've been openly partnering with some of the most brutal terrorist organizations in the world. I mean, this was really clear in Libya during the Obama administration. It became clear in Syria. And the intelligence agencies even admitted this. So we have from the Defense Intelligence Agency a 2012 memo where they said, we support the Syrian revolution, talking about the Obama administration, the French, the British, along with the Turks and the Sunni Arab dictators on the Gulf Peninsula. They also said that the Syrian revolution is led by Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, they disclosed that right there in the document. And then they said one of our goals in supporting this is to create a Salafist principality in eastern Syria. So I know this is hard for people to understand. I know it sounds wild, but the very enemies that the intelligence agencies are supposedly keeping us safe from are actually being built up, aided, abetted, armed, and trained by those same intelligence agencies. It's true when it comes to the drug trafficking. The CIA has been caught more times than I can count importing drugs to this country. The head of the DEA went on national television and said he caught the CIA importing 1 ton of cocaine on an airplane in cooperation with the Venezuelan National Guard. You would think people would be arrested for something like that, and yet it continued. Gary Webb, a journalist from the San Jose Mercury News, blew the lid off of massive CIA cocaine trafficking coming through California and Arkansas, the Clinton involvement there, and he committed suicide with 2 bullets into his brain, is what they reported on the television. So the gun running, they got caught on the gun running, right? The Operation Fast and Furious, Project Gunrunner, they were selling heavy weaponry to the Mexican drug cartels that were busy slaughtering innocent people, that were murdering Mexican police officers. It's a long pattern. Flagrant criminal activity. They spy on members of Congress. They blackmail people. They overthrow foreign governments. Every criminal activity that you can imagine. And yet there's never any accountability. In fact, a big part of their budget is secret from Congress. So we have a major problem with the intelligence agencies. And if they were actually working to keep us safe, that'd be one thing. It'd still be criminal. It'd still be atrocious. It still shouldn't happen. But that would be one thing. But then when you realize that they are emboldening our enemies everywhere, they are supplying weapons to people who really shouldn't have weapons. They're undermining America at every turn. You realize we have a problem on our hands that is absolutely enormous.
Yeah, no, it's it all goes hand in glove with what we just saw in Afghanistan, you know, arming the Taliban and all the radical groups there with the finest technology in the world, $80+ billion worth of it. And, yep. And people, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, but people look, oh, that was just such a big mistake. No, it wasn't a mistake. They don't make mistakes like that. It's purposeful. And that's what we have to stop deceiving ourselves with, thinking they think like we do and they're well-intentioned. They're just naive or ignorant, or they just don't get the big picture, whatever. And they, because they do. And it's very sad that they do and still act in that kind of way. But no, that's, and so, then as you dig in, and I think this is probably the part that's most interesting to people, just because maybe from movies, maybe from just the secrecy of it. But as you dig in, the deep state behind the deep state, which are really the people that are kind of dictating these things to happen. This is the course we're heading, and here's the new agenda for sustainability or whatever it is. They're the players that really are the kind of the brains behind the operation. Talk about that a little bit, just from the CFR to the Bilderberg to the Trilateral Commission. And I know there's many others besides that, but those kind of groups, just give an overview of what, how each of them fit into this. And then when you're done with that, just dig a little bit into the Rockefeller family themselves, because I feel in the last 100 years, no one's been more significant in kind of really building this whole thing up.
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. And I think this is the even more crucial to understand than the exact mechanics of the bureaucracy or exactly what the intelligence agencies are doing, because the orders are not coming from the elected leadership in Washington. In fact, Hillary Clinton, I think, summed it up perfectly. She gave a talk at the Council on Foreign Relations. They just opened a new satellite office in Washington, D.C. And she said, hey, it's great that you guys have an office here in Washington, D.C. Now I won't have to go as far to be told what I should be doing and how I should be thinking about things, right? This is while she's serving as Secretary of State. And we all naively assume that she's getting instructions from Barack Obama, or that she's consulting her advisors who are trying to do the will of the American people. No, 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 no. She, by her own admission, is getting her instructions from the Council on Foreign Relations. This has been the case for generations. It's not unique to Hillary Clinton. I know everybody loves to hate Hillary Clinton, but trust me, she's not the king of the hill. She's not the head of the snake. She is a player within this. So let's start with the Council on Foreign Relations. The establishment, and actually I've got a few books that I'll reference right here. I've got a book called Tragedy and Hope. It was written by, incidentally, Bill Clinton's mentor, Carol Quigley, who was a history professor at Georgetown University. And he talked about this international Anglophile network, this global establishment. And he was very proud to be kind of part of them. I mean, he really viewed himself as part of the deep state in the truest sense of the term. He says he agrees with most of their objectives. And he said their objectives is a global system where all the financial and political control was in the hands of a tiny little elite. And he's like, I agree with all that. That's great. He said, my chief difference of opinion with them is that they want to be secret. And I think everybody ought to know how wonderful this all is. So he wrote this book and they were very upset about that. But he talked about this international operation that got a huge boost in funding from Cecil Rhodes. Now, this was a mining magnate, really a British imperialist who went down. Incidentally, he helped destroy the Afrikaner, the Boer republics in South Africa, so he could steal all their mining wealth. It wasn't any kind of noble ideals. He just wanted all the minerals that they were happened to be sitting on top of. So he went down there and destroyed them with the help of the British Empire. He had this massive fortune that he had accumulated by the end of his life. And in his will, he bequeathed a lot of it into this secret operation, a set of concentric circles, a secret society in the truest sense of the term. Now, this operation had a lot of goals, but one of them was to create a global system with the elite in charge. And all this, again, is documented in Carol Quigley's books. In the United States, the most important branch of this operation that he identifies is the Council on Foreign Relations. So the history of how that came to be, after World War I, they thought, this is our chance. We're going to set up a global system. We're going to create the League of Nations, and we're going to progressively empower that to truly become a world governance system. Well, it didn't work out as planned because the U.S. Senate said, nope, not going to happen. We're not going to participate. I think they got like 2 votes in the U.S. Senate. So that went down in flames. And they said, look, we can't have any kind of humiliation like that again. So in 1921, they set up the Council on Foreign Relations. This was supposed to shift public opinion and get people elected who would do the bidding of these global elites. The Dulles brothers were key people, John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles. So John Foster Dulles was Secretary of State. Allen Dulles was, of course, the head of the CIA when they betrayed the guys at Bay of Pigs so that Castro could capture them, kill them, torture them. Massive victory for communism. So the CFR, and you asked about the Rockefellers. I'll go ahead and bring them in right now. I've got a book, another book here. It's called Kissinger on the Couch, and it was written by Phyllis Schlafly and Admiral Chester Ward. Incredibly important book, very rare book. Almost nobody even knows about this book anymore. But Admiral Chester Ward spent 16 years as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and then he defected. And he said, guys, this is a subversive organization. They have this fanatical lust to surrender the sovereignty of the United States and merge us into an all-powerful one-world government. He says the term they hate the most in the whole English language is America First. And then when you realize that this CFR is not just, a lot of people think, well, the Republican Party is going to save us. Folks, the Republican Party is just as much part of the CFR as the Democrat Party. In fact, Nixon, Ford, the Bushes, Cheney, I mean, all these guys run right through the CFR. All of their administrations have been packed to the gills with members of the Council on Foreign Relations. If you want to know what they think about things, you can subscribe to their magazine. They're pretty open about the fact that they want a one world government, that they want to divide the world up into regional governments. And one of the interesting things that Admiral Chester Ward reveals in this book is that there is an inner core within the Council on Foreign Relations. And he says that inner core is the Rockefeller brothers, right? David Rockefeller was the chairman for a period of decades, extremely influential within CFR circles. And we'll take the Rockefeller strand and we'll go right into the Trilateral Commission. This is another one of these organizations that kind of calls the shots behind the scenes. And it was founded by David Rockefeller after he read a book by another deep state operative, another guy that comes out of the Council on Foreign Relations, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a professor at Columbia University. He wrote a book. It was called America's Role in the Technotronic Age, Between Two Ages. And I can summarize it for you real quick. America, that old American model, is obsolete. Marxism is going to be this wonderful wave of the future. Yeah, there's imperfections. Yeah, they kind of slaughtered a lot of people. But hey, at least it's progress. And then the next step, he believed, would be technocracy, where we kind of fuse the two together, bring the world all together under one global authority based on regional governments, where instead of having self-government, instead of having elected representatives making decisions, we would have the technocratic elite, the engineers, the scientists doing the bidding of the elites, making all of our decisions for us. So the Trilateral Commission was formed to advance that agenda with David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who incidentally was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, helped play a big role in building up what eventually became the Taliban, the Mujahideen, the Al-Qaeda, under the guise of fighting the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Maybe a story for another day. So they built up Trilateral Commission. They've got, unlike the CFR, which focuses on America, they've got their sister group, the Royal Institute for International Affairs in the UK. There's the European Council on Foreign Relations. And all over the world, they have these things. The Trilateral Commission was more elite, far less people. The CFR has thousands of members. The Trilaterals have hundreds, and they come from Japan, Western Europe, Canada, and the United States, and they advanced this goal. One of their big ideas was the new international economic order, global technocracy. One of Zbigniew Brzezinski's big ideas that he promoted through the Trilateral Commission was regional government. This is where Kissinger played a big role, too. You can't have all these sovereign nations, right? Going back to the Treaty of Westphalia. And of course, God ultimately is the one who said twice in Scripture, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, he is the author of nations. They didn't like that idea because, you know, people divided up into nations, they have a loyalty to their nation above the global authority and so on. So they wanted to divide the world up into regional governments. The European Union is probably the premier example. Now they've got the African Union, you've got the Eurasian Union that Putin is building. They want a North American Union. Make no mistake, they want the same thing here. It's just a tough nut to crack with, you know, those grumpy Americans with their hundreds of millions of guns and elected representatives and state governments. So Trilateral Commission, another key group. Then you've got Bilderberg, and a lot of the elites from the CFR and from the Trilateral Commission go right into Bilderberg. In fact, David Rockefeller was one of the leading figures within Bilderberg. So this is even more elite. They get somewhere between 120 and 150 people every year. They get together either in Europe, Canada, the United States, and they discuss policy. A lot of these guys have talked publicly a little bit. They admit that they want a one world government, but of course they say it's for our own benefit. They boast about their role in creating the European Union and the Euro. They admit that they discuss policy and that then everybody goes home and uses this policy document that they come up with in their own area. Like you said, all right, guys, sustainability is the new buzzword. Go out and promote it. Or, hey, we need to go wage a war on Iraq. Everybody go home and promote that to your people. So that's what they do. They also do what seem to be kind of like job interviews for people. You get these obscure people that show up, and very often they go on from obscurity to great heights. Bill Clinton is a good example. Prime Minister Tony Blair, right? He showed up as just a, you know, no name member of parliament, and suddenly, boom, he gets to be the British prime minister. You have all the heads of the European Commission, the presidents of the European Commission, in over many, many years have been at Bilderberg shortly before they become the leaders of the European Union. So I've been to two of these meetings, obviously never as an invited guest. One time I did manage to get inside through some negotiation. The other time I was stuck outside the fence. So I've talked to these people. I've interviewed some of these people. They don't normally like to chat, but the useful idiots that come, they think they're so cool because they get to come that they're happy to be on camera. But and there's many other of these groups, Curtis, as you pointed out, I could go on and on. There's the World Government Summit. I mean, there's all over the world. They have these kind of groups and then they start offshoots to promote particular agendas. But that really is kind of the visible layer of what I call the deep state behind the deep state, where the real policy decisions are made. And then, you know, they put the word out to the politicians and then they implement them. So,
yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's been going on since Cecil Rhodes in the late 1800s and things. So it's a, that's why it looks like it sprung up overnight. It's not. It's been 120 plus years in the making of slowly influencing, getting into positions of power, promoting those that are like-minded and fellow travelers and things. So it's been a long march, but it's been going on a lot longer than most people think. And that's why they've kind of awakened to think, how'd they do this overnight? And they didn't do it overnight. It's been a long time coming. Talk about for a second the Illuminati, because everyone talks about that. And it's like, is that a conspiracy theory or not? And just talk about the facts we know about it. Like, we don't know if it's around or not now. But I thought it was so interesting you talking about how George Washington was concerned about that, showing, okay, it's obviously a real thing. So just give the history of that and how that probably sprung into other groups or whatever, but just a little bit of it, because everyone talks about that. No one knows, is that a real thing or is that not a real thing? You know, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, Curtis. Thank you. And I think this is critical to understand. And I really think some biblical context. I was actually just reading 2 Kings to my children last night, and we read about a conspiracy to kill one of the kings of Israel by his servants. Okay. So conspiracies are biblical. If you read Psalm 2, verse 2, you even read that the kings of the earth were conspiring against the Lord. So really, it's nothing new that wicked men and very powerful men combine together. And, you know, I think we need to start with defining conspiracy, because unfortunately, the conspirators themselves have thrown so much bad publicity on that word. People don't even know what it means anymore. People hear conspiracy and they think that means something stupid that's not true. In fact, conspiracy means two or more people coming together in secret for illegal, immoral, or nefarious purposes. The Justice Department charges people with conspiracy every day of the week. Your state attorney general charges people with conspiracy every day of the week. It's one of the big charges that they're throwing out against the people who attended the mostly peaceful protests on January 6th. They're charging them with conspiracy. So conspiracy doesn't mean something dumb that's not true. Conspiracy means a group, two or more people coming together for illicit, evil, immoral purposes. Now, there are many, many secret societies, and there have been throughout human history. But you asked me to start with the Illuminati, and I think that's a very good place to start, because this is one secret society that we have a lot of documentation that it existed. It was founded in 1776 in Bavaria by a gentleman by the name of Adam Weishaupt, and he had many different hats. One of the things he did was he was a professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University. We know a lot about his views. In fact, I think the most important single document that we have about the Illuminati came from a high-level Scottish Freemason named John Robison, a very influential man, a very high standing in society. In fact, he was the first head of the Royal Society of Edinburgh, so very, very influential man, and he was a high-ranking Freemason, and he traveled through the continental Freemason lodges in Europe. So he was in Paris, he was in Berlin, he was even all the way in St. Petersburg in Russia, and he said, oh my goodness, fellow Freemasons, there is a secret society trying to infiltrate our secret society, and they need to be exposed. And so he got a lot of their documents. He had their code names. And so he was quoting from the correspondence that these people, including Adam Weishaupt, were sending to other leaders in this organization. He warned that this operation was trying to hijack the Masonic lodges, that they were promoting this evil, evil philosophy. I mean, if you want to understand where they're coming from, just think as anti-Christian as you could possibly be. Okay, so God ordained private property. They wanted to abolish private property. God ordained the family. They wanted to abolish the family. God ordained marriage. They wanted to abolish marriage. They wanted to undo sexual morality. They wanted to abolish nation states and have a one world brotherhood, they called it, with them ruling at the top. They were perverse and wicked to the max. And their first great success, according to John Robison in his book, Proofs of a Conspiracy, this was published in 1798, was the French Revolution. And, you know, the Bible tells us to judge things by their fruit. Well, the fruit of the French Revolution was very clear. Blood running in the streets, tens of thousands of people literally being beheaded with guillotines, mass murder, savagery, torture, outrages that are just unspeakable. They took a prostitute and stood her up in Notre Dame Cathedral, and they said, look, bow down. This is the goddess of reason. You should worship her. They hated God so much, they had to get rid of the 7-day week because, of course, God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. They said, no, we're going to have a 10-day week because, you know, reason. So that's how much they hated God. That's how much they hated Christ. And the whole background of this is laid out in this book by John Robison, Proofs of a Conspiracy. Now, this book was actually given by a minister to our first president, George Washington. He said, look, you need to read this. These conspirators are trying to make their way into the United States. And I love it because George Washington read the book. And I have a copy. It's not within reach, or I'd grab it and show it to you, but you can get it online. Proofs of a Conspiracy by John Robison. And so Washington read this and he wrote back to his friend, the minister, and he said, look, it's not my intention to doubt that the Illuminati and these Jacobins are spreading their evil ideas in the United States. He says, in fact, nobody is more convinced of this than I am. This letter is in the National Archives. In fact, it was online. When I first started my research into this, Curtis, I found it on the government's National Archives website. They have since taken it down, but they still have it in their files. This was authored by George Washington's own hand, and it was sent to his friend. So George Washington was aware of this. He was concerned about it. Now, you still have a lot of people today who say the Illuminati is doing this, the Illuminati is doing that. I cannot confirm that. And I don't know that anybody has the evidence to confirm that. They may, and I just may not be aware of it. But there was a very serious effort to suppress this evil society by the kings and the princes of Europe, especially the German states, the German principalities. When they realized what was going on here, they said, oh my goodness, these people fully intend to behead us all and destroy all the religions of Europe and all the monarchies of Europe. We can't allow this. So there was a very serious effort to suppress this. They went underground. We don't know whether the suppression effort was successful or not. What we do know is that these very same principles from the pit of hell resurfaced again with massive force behind them in the mid-1800s with Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. And of course, we know there was an operation behind them, right? The League of the Just. It wasn't just these two wackadoodles that scribbled down some ideas and suddenly the world was in a revolution. They had a serious operation supporting them. So we can't, at least I can't, draw a definitive connection between the Illuminati and Karl Marx. But what I can say is the ideas were exactly the same. Overthrow the social order, overthrow private property, overthrow the family, overthrow the nation state, and create a one world system based on basically Satanism. And if you read the book, Marx and Satan, you'll see that these Marxist ideas, we're not talking about atheism here. We're talking about diabolical ideas straight from the pit of hell. And so, you know, whether they're still around or not, I don't know. But we know that these ideas now are more popular than ever. And unfortunately, they have infected even many churches, even many people who say they're Christian have bought into a lot of these satanic ideas that first the Illuminati and later the Marxists started promoting.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And Satan, who, of course, is their commander in chief, just keeps funneling these same ideas. And at the root of them, like what you said, it's so when you see it from a Christian worldview, you realize it's always about destroying everything the way God intended it to be. Everything. And that's why they don't miss a trick on anything, because their commander in chief knows exactly how God intended everything to be. And he's not stopping until everything has been flipped on its head. That's what I, when I first started really studying this 20 years ago or so, I just, when I saw the 45 current communist goals and it had things like promoting pornography, I was like, wait a minute, how do they get that? We don't get that. How do they understand that will destroy a culture and a country? And then I realized, oh, of course, and actually John Stormer is the one that told me that. He goes, Curtis, it all started in the Garden of Eden.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
You're right. And I said, oh, that's great. Okay, Alex, get briefly into Skull and Bones, which a lot of people have heard of, and then the Bohemian Grove and some of that. Just give us an overview.
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. And, you know, the secret societies continue to exist to this day. A lot of people kind of have seen the movies where they kind of make it seem like cool or, you know, fun joke or something like that. But there is a lot of this still going on today. You don't have to search very far to find it. In Northern California, for example, you have the Bohemian Grove. 2,500 of the most powerful men on this planet get together every year, and they do very bizarre ceremonies and rituals. And they drink a lot, and they become intoxicated. And I mean, this has been going on for many, many years. In fact, all the delegates to the founding conference of the United Nations in San Francisco went down there with Alger Hiss, who was later convicted of being a Soviet spy. And you look at the Skull and Bones, a very, very influential organization. I'm thankful to my friend Charlotte Iserbit for helping shed so much light on this. Now, she was the senior education advisor in the Ronald Reagan administration, and her dad and her grandpa were both members of this wicked society. It's based at Yale. Their headquarters is called The Tomb, true story, and they recruit 15 new people into their secret society every year, and it was very mysterious. It was actually founded by a drug runner in the 1800s, and not a lot of people knew much about it, but then Charlotte Iserbit comes along, and when her father dies, she got all these papers, all these documents with the contact list and everything. And she gave those to one of America's most important historians, Anthony Sutton from Stanford University. And he ended up writing two books about this society after realizing the importance. One is called America's Secret Establishment, An Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones. The other is about the Skull and Bones' role in education, which is critical for people to understand as well. But I think to summarize what this operation does, we can go to Anthony Sutton. He wrote, again, this phenomenal book, The Introduction to the Skull and Bones. He says this is really a recruiting ground for a conspiracy to create a one-world government. And he said the main tool that they use is trying to control both sides of the debate. He says that they need this dialectical process of conflict to move the ball forward. And so you see they get left-wing voices, they get right-wing voices, and they let them argue with each other. And it's kind of like heads I win, tails you lose, right? No matter what, you end up with advancing the Skull and Bones agenda. The 2004 election was a really obvious example of this. So we could choose between George W. Bush, who was, of course, a member of the Skull and Bones, or John Kerry, who was also a member of the Skull and Bones. They were asked about this on television. And I think another really important one to note, as far as this dialectical process goes, is William Buckley. Okay, William Buckley was trotted out as the conservative leader, and anyone who defied him was by definition not conservative. He was, you know, the Washington Post, the New York Times constantly praising this guy. He was given his own show on public television, taxpayer-funded television. How many conservatives do you see on PBS or NPR these days? Right, the answer is not many, for obvious reasons. But William Buckley was always welcome there, and he was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He used to work for the CIA, so he's got all these nexus. And his job, I think, was to kind of corral the conservative movement and continue betraying, you know, to the United Nations, to abortion, whatever the issue was. Buckley's job was to say, all right, guys, we should surrender on this issue. And so they kept moving the ball down the line. That's how they work. Now, people have gone into these secret societies and they've recorded this. ABC Fake News in 2001 actually aired some footage that some journalists captured of the rituals going on in the Skull and Bones Society. They were kissing a skull. They were doing a mock human sacrifice or laying down in a coffin. You can find this video on YouTube. Alex Jones managed to break into the Bohemian Grove, and he filmed one of their rituals called the Cremation of Care, and then he confronted some of these people about it on the streets of Washington, D.C., like David Gergen. Like, hey, so you were there for the Cremation of Care. You want to talk about it? And, oh, no, absolutely not. I don't respect you for that. So these things happen, you know, and I don't think as Christians that we need to really get in the weeds about, you know, what does this ritual mean? And what, you know, is that Satan or is that Moloch or is that Baal? It really doesn't matter. It's satanic. It's enough for us to know that this is evil, that we are to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, that we are to reprove them and to expose them. Paul says we're not ignorant of the devices of Satan, and we shouldn't be, but we also shouldn't become obsessed with them. But I think it's important for Christians to know that the reality that God presents to us in his word about a spiritual battle, about Satan as a lion roaming the earth, seeking whom he may devour. The Bible actually talks about him as the God of this world. You know, and a lot of Christians just read right over that, and they don't think it has any application or significance. Folks, the world as God reveals it to us in the Bible is exactly as the world is in real life. And you can confirm that either from the scriptures or from looking around you. But these secret societies are very real. They're involved in very, not everybody who goes there is necessarily, you know, a Baal worshiper or something. A lot of these people think it's going to be a big boost to their career. Richard Nixon is a good example. He went to the Bohemian Grove, and if you read his autobiography, he says the most important speech of his political career was the one he gave in front of the Bohemian Grovers at the Bohemian Grove. And then, you know, we know what he really thought about him. Those tapes that came out after, you know, the whole scandal happened, I can't repeat what he said about the Bohemian Grove, but it was very, very unflattering, involving homosexuality and other things. We can leave it at that. He was not a fan of the Bohemian Grove, even though he went, even though he gave what he said was the most important speech of his political career. So I think it's important as Christians that we understand these things are real without getting all into the weeds. This stuff is happening.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's a real war that we're in, as we talk about in Ephesians 6. It's a spiritual battle, and that's why you're going to have much darkness on that side, because that's the battle we're in the spiritual world. And we're on the side of light and truth and what is righteous. And that's why it's so serious that we are educated on this, and to educate others, again, not for the obsession part of it, just to keep digging in and digging in and digging in where there's no point to it. It's to understand the time so then we can act in the right way. We can protect our children. We can educate our neighbors and friends and people at church so they're not deceived to believe that everything's just fine and everything's going to be okay and there's nothing to worry about, because that's not true. That's why they've been so successful, because our side has been asleep for 50 years thinking, oh, it's fine, America, nothing's ever going to happen to America. And they're waking to see that's not the case. But okay, so now in kind of wrapping up, tell us how those things kind of fit into the agenda behind the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, in these globalist organizations that have really, I think World Economic Forum, in my mind, has become kind of the front runner, because it's not as threatening. The UN, like, everyone's never quite trusted that operation, and they have so much baggage, it makes you go, who are these people? But the World Economic Forum, when you're talking about economics and prosperity, everyone's interested in that because that affects them. And so they're packaging all these schemes under the guise it's going to help them have a better life and things like that. But kind of talk about how those, all the, what we talked about, the deep state, are they in control of the World Economic Forum? How does that all work? And where do they really want to take us?
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. And I see the World Economic Forum really as a front group, as a front man for the deep state behind the deep state. It's kind of like the visible element that you see. And you see this a lot with the deep state. They stand up, a front organization to promote some policy. David Rockefeller was a master of this, right? Whenever he wanted to promote the integration of the Americas, he'd stand up a group called America's Forum or whatever. They constantly do this. And I think the World Economic Forum really should be understood in that light. Klaus Schwab is not the mastermind of anything. He is a faithful, loyal servant of the deep state agenda, of the diabolical plans that they're pursuing. And all of this stuff that we're hearing about right now, the great reset, how we're going to move into, Klaus Schwab calls it the merge or the fusion of our biological bodies with our digital identities. All of this has been on the agenda for a long time. Klaus Schwab didn't dream this stuff up. It is diabolical. It is wicked. And it all fits together. I mean, if you look at when they unveiled the Great Reset for us, this was at the World Economic Forum. We were actually at the New American, the first publication in America to write about this. And then after a while, the New York Times said we were conspiracy theorists. No, we weren't. I watched the unveiling of the Great Reset, and I quoted what they said. There was no theorizing. And if they're talking about it openly, by definition, it's not a conspiracy. So silly stuff. But if you look at the key players that they trotted out there, it tells you everything you need to know about this agenda. They had Klaus Schwab, head of the World Economic Forum, big time into this fourth industrial revolution, which is transhumanism. Said that basically we're going to start measuring time now. It won't be BC before Christ. It'll be BC before coronavirus, and then AC after coronavirus. So it was clear they were inaugurating this new era. Then they brought out the head of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, a known socialist, in fact, the former leader of the Socialist International. Again, the ideas of the socialists, of the Marxists, of the communists are very much in line with the plans of evil going back centuries, maybe millennia. They trotted out the head of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva, who's going to handle the monetary transition. We're now very quickly moving away from the dollar as the global reserve into the special drawing rights as the new global reserve. This has been in the cards for a long time. Now we're just moving toward the final destination. They also had a Chinese communist there, a guy by the name of Ma Jun, very influential within the People's Bank of China, their central bank, also big time into their green agenda. And of course, the green agenda is just more of this. And so the way to understand the World Economic Forum is a front group for the deep state. The way to understand the Great Reset is just a new marketing slogan for the same old garbage they've been promoting for generations. They're just more open about it now. It used to be if you said they were going to promote this, they'd say, you're an extremist. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're just making stuff up. Now they don't say that anymore. Now they say, well, you're extreme if you don't like this idea, if you don't think we should have a great reset with transhumanism and a new economic system and so on. So they're kind of dropping the mask, coming out of the closet, if you will. And I think in a sense, that's good. It was inevitable that it was going to come to this. But now everybody can look at this and say, wow, that's crazy. I don't like that idea. So now is going to be our chance, hopefully, to raise awareness about this, to get people waking up, realizing that we're actually dealing with evil here. First of all, call on the Lord for help and repent and be saved, and then do the things that God has called us to do. So,
yeah, no, that's exactly right. No, it's as I've talked about before, there's no better time to be alive in that we're right in the middle of the most significant battle, I believe, in the history of the world, because technology has given man the ability to control man that he's never had before. And so it's kind of coming to a head, the fight for freedom and truth over tyranny and these evil people that have no value for human life. They have no value for any of God's principles or any of the constitutional principles our country was founded upon. And so it's a great time to be awake, to be educated, to be learning, but then using that education to wake family, friends, neighbors, and most of all, your children and your grandchildren. You've got to get their hearts, their minds, and their souls and educate them so they're not deceived by all the many lies that we're being told. Well, Alex, I really appreciate your time very much. One of the things I know of that is helpful for what you're doing, but the New American Magazine, I encourage everyone always, everywhere I go, to get this if you haven't. You get 2 issues a month for a very low price, about $5. And it's what I love about the New American, and Alex writes a lot of these articles and is involved with this, but is if you read, like on this one's on critical race theory, if you read this magazine, you will be an expert then on critical race theory. You don't have to keep digging into it and, oh, I need 5 more books. No, they save you the time of consolidating the information to here's what's important. And here's what it really is. And so you read it, you got it, and then you share it with others. But then you're ready to go. You don't have to spend all your time figuring out, well, what is it and how does it work? And like we do so often, we're so prone to wallow in the details instead of become educated and then attack with the truth. And so anyway, I love that. But what's other things the people could do to be a blessing to you, to get your materials and things like that?
Well, I just want to thank you so much, Curtis, for all that you're doing and have done. You just amazing work that you're up to. In addition to the New American Magazine, we actually, from the special issues we did on the Deep State, we ended up turning them into a book. It's called Deep State, the Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. It's written by yours truly. And you can get a copy of this at Shop TNA, or you can get a copy from my website if you want a signed copy. Go to libertysentinel.org, and you can either go to /books or /donate, and you can order one there. I'll send you a signed copy. And I think it's important. You know, it's obviously not an encyclopedia. It could have been. It's a relatively small book because, as you pointed out, we don't want to get bogged down in the weeds. We don't need to know the name and address and political affiliation of every single member of the Council on Foreign Relations, although we do have all their names listed in the appendix if you need a handy guide when someone's running for Congress in your district. So that's one useful tool. I do encourage people to get into the Word. You know, read your Bible. The Bible has all of the information. It has all of the strategies that we can use to resist. It has all the commands that God has given us as to what we should be doing in these times that we live in. And I just encourage people, you know, and to go back one more time to a secular idea. Sun Tzu, the great Chinese military strategist, was not a Christian, but he was a very insightful man when it came to warfare. And he explained that if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. Right now, as Americans, we don't know ourselves. Most Americans are totally clueless about our history, our Constitution, our founders, the settlement of America. People don't know anything about that. And we don't know the enemy. The most important thing to know about the enemy, as you pointed out, Curtis, perfectly stated, the commander-in-chief is Satan. That's the main thing you need to know. And then, you know, under that, we should know a little bit about how the enemy operates. So the second section of this book is the different strategies that they use. What's the relationship of communist China to the deep state? How do the public schools fit into this picture? The Great Reset. So all that's in there. We want to know how the enemy operates, what they're up to. So I encourage people to get up to speed on these things and then get active. Get active in your church. Get active in your community. Make sure you share out these videos. If you're not yet signed up to Curtis's email alerts, you should get them. They're phenomenal. And just be in prayer and be in the Word, and God will show you what you need to be doing in these times.
That's exactly right. Now, well, thank you. Get that book, people, and I'll have a link below. I've read through all the articles you kind of consolidated into that, and they were excellent and just help you understand the big picture. But we appreciate you, people. Don't be discouraged. Just be active and be diligent in doing the things you can do. Satan wants us to be overwhelmed. Do not be overwhelmed. You were born for such a time as this, and make sure you're doing exactly the things God's asked you to do. But I appreciate you greatly. Thank you so much for watching these things and sharing these things and praying for our country and caring about what's right. I appreciate it so much. I'm so thankful for you. But until next week, God bless you.